Bob Scully's World Show is brought to you by Walter Surface Technologies. Only the best. And by Clocks Technologies. Lighting the way to a brighter future.
Hi, this is Bob Scully, and welcome to another edition of The World Show, Free Markets, The Walter Series. This week, we meet Matt Kibbe, the founder of an organization called Free the People. It's directed at young people, and it's a very serious endeavor, and he's a serious guy. But he's not a stuffed shirt. He knows how to throw a good party. As a matter of fact, he threw one a few years ago, and boy, did he get a turnout. He called it the Tea Party. Here's Matt Kibbe. Matt Kibbe, in our business, the TV business, we think a great title doesn't guarantee a show's success, but it gets you on the right track. I think book titles are the same way. Here's your latest book. It's been out for a few years, but it's still out in the bookstores, and I love the title. Don't Hurt People and Don't Take Their Stuff. You, as a libertarian, called it that. Why?
I was really trying to boil down the entire canon of classical liberalism and libertarianism. And not everybody has time to read Human Action. Not everybody has time to read Adam Smith's Theory of Moral Sentiments. Mm-hmm. And in the internet age, in an age where we have 140 characters or even just a few more, how do you explain these values in a way that connects with people outside of our little academic community? And that was what I came up with. I don't think it's particularly original. I might have stole it from your great-grandmother, to be honest with you, because that's what Mom taught me. Don't hurt people and don't take their stuff.
Yeah, it hits the nail on the head, and you do define them. Don't hurt people. Free people just want to be left alone, not harassed or harmed by someone else with an agenda or designs over their life and property. Don't take people's stuff. America's founders fought to ensure property rights and our individual right to the fruits of our labors. So these are the kinds of things. What I like about it is it points out, I guess, a contradiction of libertarianism. It's so simple, so convincing, yet is making slow progress, let's face it. How come?
I think that people today, particularly young people, are struggling to find an alternative platform to this two-part duopoly that they're presented. You're either a conservative or a liberal. Mm-hmm. You're either a communist or a fascist. You're either a Republican or a Democrat. And young people, they curate everything one piece at a time. They curate their music, they choose their friends online, they choose their news from thousands of different sources. They live in a radically libertarian world in that sense. And yet when they come to politics and ideology, someone else has decided that they only get two choices. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a tremendous opportunity for those of us that believe in classic liberal values like don't hurt people, don't take their stuff. Try to do something that no one's ever done before. You can only do that when people are free. And I think we've always been controlled from the top down. All of our institutions, media, politics, even corporations were very top down and controlling. They controlled who we got to connect with, what we thought. And today, it's a wide open field. It's the Wild West of ideas. So I think we have to translate our values into something that's really sort of visceral with young people.
And I was fantasizing about that when I was reading your material. It's true that kids will pick their music as they see fit, and the whole system is there to give it to them, but that's taste. In the case of politics, it's interest. Very different. There's vested interest. It'll never be an open bar. And I was thinking, well, what would we need? We have polls on the president. Would we need a poll on every single member of Congress and then see how they're doing that morning and sort of force them into certain positions? Or how would it work?
Certainly in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is still controlled by a collusion of insiders. And, you know, public choice economics teaches us that politicians and all of these interests that gather in Washington, they're self-interested. That's how politics works. That's how we get such weird crony outcomes from the current process. But of course, opposite of those special interests is the general interest and the common values that make human cooperation possible. I think we have to tap into that broader perspective. And the old problem with special interest politics is that it was expensive to influence the outcome of that game. So if you're just a person, if you're just a mom, if you're just a 22-year-old trying to figure out the system, you're almost just alienated. It's not worth it. It's not my time. It's not worth my time. But I think today, with social media, with Facebook, with the ability to curate community and knowledge from the outside, from the bottom up, it's a fundamentally different value proposition that makes special interest politics, it puts it at risk. And you see it today. All the insiders are kind of freaking out on everything from Uber or even the way we curate our news. It's all bottom up today. And the incumbents hate that.
And you, at the same time, you show great respect for the origins of this republic. That's significant. That was a very primitive time in other ways. But as I just quoted, you mentioned the founding fathers. You were instrumental in starting the Tea Party. Just that symbol is a throwback, obviously, to the 18th century. You think, you seem to believe, within the basic shape of that republic is tremendous potential for freedom. And it's not, it's lying in the ground. It's like minerals that haven't been dug up.
Yeah, I mean, the American founding was really premised on a lot of the ideas that were imported from the Scottish Enlightenment. And one of those fundamental insights was the wisdom of crowds, the ability of people to solve problems almost regardless of what governments do to impose a different set of goals on top of them. And that was the genius of America. There was a trust in Madisonian philosophy that said, you know what, people are more trustful than governments, and that's why we wrote a constitution that constrained the power of government. Of course, James Madison couldn't have conceived of Facebook or Twitter, but I wonder what he would have thought about it. I wonder what Scottish Enlightenment philosophers would have seen in this new ability of people to crowdsource knowledge and to solve problems and to do things without any constraints from the top down. I think it's just a beautiful way to think about how markets actually work in practice.
Yes, and the basic ideas were right. And Montesquieu, the separation of powers, he's the inventor of that. He was writing decades before the American Revolution, and he influenced the American Revolution. These guys were onto something, but we lost our way.
We lost our way, and I think the founders anticipated the natural tendencies of governments to coalesce power and to get corrupted over time. And they tried to restrain that with constitutional rules. But I think today we have to tap again into the wisdom of crowds. And the Tea Party you mentioned, that was part of that. I've watched in this country, and it didn't start with the Tea Party. You could go back and look at the Ron Paul Revolution. You could even look at Howard Dean before that. There is a disintermediation happening in our politics because people have more power. Insurgent candidates that are outside the system have an ability to self-organize and raise money outside the system. You could even argue Barack Obama did that to Hillary Clinton in 2008. And for us, as people that believe in liberty, we need to appreciate that this is our special moment because we have an ability to coalesce a very broad gathering of people that share just a few values in common, a few values that are not only fundamentally American, but they're fundamentally human. Don't hurt people, don't take their stuff, things like that.
And the original members of the Tea Party in Boston, I'm sure, were surprised at what they set off. Yeah. Were you surprised that your Tea Party took off as it did?
Oh, we were shocked. And, you know, the Tea Party organizing in the original context was very much a planned small cadre of people that were trying to create a PR event. Mm-hmm. And you go back and study Sam Adams and the Tea Partiers. They were conscious that they were going to be watched, not just by the British, but by skeptical Americans who were trying to decide whether or not they were going to join the revolution. When we organized our massive march in 9/12/2009, we thought we'd have 10,000 people, and we thought that was arrogant to think we could do something that big. And of course, 1.5 million people showed up.
Yeah.
And it was the power of decentralization. It was a fact that we didn't organize it. The community organized it. The crowd self-organized, and it was such a beautiful day. It was a disciplined day, and unlike some of the protests you see today, nobody got hurt, nobody broke any windows, nobody set any fires. People said please and thank you, and nobody told them to do that. Those were just common values that define that community. I think we need to make sure that however we organize in the future, it needs to be peaceful, it needs to be respectful, it needs to actually be willing to listen to people with varying ideas. We should be having conversations with our so-called political enemies and try to sort out some of these things.
And you therefore must have been quite disappointed, though, over time. It's not that the Tea Party necessarily lost its way, but it got successfully demonized.
Yeah.
And to the point where, for the average guy in the street, it's a symbol of extremism and so forth. That must be disappointing, knowing how you feel about all this. How do you feel about that?
It was demonized because it had fundamental political consequences. We were actually repopulating the Republican Party, in particular, with liberty-minded senators like Rand Paul and Mike Lee, Justin Amash, mm-hmm. Thomas Massey, dozens more, were taking on Republican incumbents. So we were challenging the very heart of the political establishment, and I think the demonization came from both parties. It wasn't just the Democrats who were also suffered under the political consequences of the Tea Party. But ultimately, and I think this is where I'm going today, ultimately I think politics probably corrupted the Tea Party, because once it became so politically influential, different political characters jumped up on the stage, tried to sort of hijack that agenda, and that diluted the values, the common values that held that together. I think today we need to get upstream of politics and focus on those values and not just the consequences of the next election.
And you started Freedom Works and now Free the People, not Tea Party Redux. Does the Tea Party really still even exist, or is it just a word?
I think that Donald Trump sort of split the Tea Party in half, because some Tea Partiers were very focused on abuse of executive power and wanting to restore the constitutional principles in the Bill of Rights, and we rightly criticized Barack Obama for that. But now there's this partisan sense amongst some former Tea Partiers that, hey, our guy's in now. Our guy, whatever he does is fine. I think that's too bad. But you know, every social movement has its life and its death. And Grassroots 2.0 to me is much broader. It's not a partisan thing. It's not a cadre of people that are looking to impact political elections. It's this broader movement of young people who are generally registering as independents. They're not interested in this two-party duopoly because they curate everything. They curate, I think, their politics and their portfolio of values the same way that they would choose their music. So that's what Free the People is trying to do. We're trying to tell stories. We're trying to turn young people on to the ideas of liberty, that the constituency that I call liberty curious. In that sense, it's almost the opposite of what the Tea Party was trying to do, because I'm trying to grow the community regardless of your political affiliation. We talk a lot to Bernie Sanders supporters. We talk a lot to libertarians. We talk a lot to conservatives. And you'd be shocked to discover that there are common values that unite those groups that you can tap into as long as it's not election season. If you're having an argument about Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, everyone goes back to their tribes and starts fighting.
But the I'm sure viewers, if they didn't know already, have figured out by now that this is not particularly Republican. This is something else. And and Ron Paul and his son Rand Paul never quite seemed to belong either when they would get into these nomination fights. People say, well, what are they doing there? They're not pro-military. This is entirely, and you've mentioned Howard Dean. You've mentioned all kinds of people who are definitely not of that camp.
Yeah.
So it was never really an outgrowth of the Republicans the way many people thought.
And for years we watched the Republican Party treat, particularly Ron Paul, with just fundamental disdain at the conventions. The project of liberty transcends politics. The project of liberty may in fact be an independent thing. I'm open to the idea that there are Republicans and Democrats, maybe there's a third and fourth party emerging that could be the home for these values. We're in this very disruptive period in world history where technology is undermining the power of dictators, of governments, of corporations, of media companies. All of that stuff means that there's more power at the end user. It's more democratized. How do we deal with that? You're going to see things like Brexit. You're going to see things like Rand Paul winning a Senate seat, but you're also going to see things like Bernie Sanders ascending and almost beating the Democratic establishment. We need to get ahead of that. And I think the only way to get ahead of it is to get upstream of politics and translate our values into stories. And we produce a lot of video, we tell a lot of tales, and we want to put a specific individual human face on these values and explain why government-run healthcare is a dangerous and devastating thing for moms who are trying to get better healthcare for their kids. We need to tell that human story. You know, the one problem with libertarians is that we love big words. We have this tribal language. We talk about the non-aggression principle. We talk about downward sloping demand curves. And our idea of a comprehensive healthcare argument is put up a spreadsheet and say, see, the numbers don't add up unless you do it this way. I don't think that's how people think. I think people want to hear about your sort of emotional appeal. Why do I care about other people? Why do I think that liberty is better than socialism?
Now, for now, that's fine, and it's quite the program, and you've got years of work cut out for you if you want. But sooner or later, you're gonna face the political choice. People are going to say, okay, I like this. Now, who do I vote for? Who's your candidate? That's going to happen. You're going to get boxed in, maybe not boxed in, but you're going to have to structure it politically at some point.
Right. Well, I always said, and it confused people sometimes, I never viewed the Tea Party as a political movement. It was a social movement. It was bound by a set of values, and some of the projects inevitably that they got involved in were political. Mm-hmm. If you create a constituency for liberty, if you create a community that's bound by a set of values, that has absolute profound political implications. I just think we have to do it. If we could sort of reverse engineer the Tea Party, we would have started with conversations about values. We would have sat down and tried to get through some of Adam Smith. Mm-hmm. We would have talked about those things. And I talked to Tea Partiers for years who were frustrated because they had that stack of books next to their bed because they wanted to know mm-hmm. what the back end was on that. But these are busy people. They have jobs and families and sometimes two jobs, and they're organizing in their spare time. The key is to make it easier. How do you make it easier for busy people to get a sense for what Adam Smith was talking about? And why is that such a profound principle when it comes to community organizing? Yeah. And that's why a three-minute video sometimes on the power of community, a three-minute video on the disaster that was socialism in Mao's Great Leap Forward, these give people access to a profound set of ideas, and if they can get through that and are interested, maybe they'll go to a 15-minute mini documentary. Maybe they'll go pull that book off the shelf and finally read it. But let's respect people for who they are, because again, we're not talking to a cadre anymore. Mm-hmm. We're talking to society at large.
And you're very obviously media savvy. And you've even seen the underside of the internet and the limitations of it. But you believe in mailing lists, or at least you used to. If we were to total up the mailing list and eliminate duplications, people who belong to one or another libertarian organization, how many people are we talking about in America? The constituency, how many are there?
I think the constituency is almost uncountable. I think it's so big that we don't even comprehend it at this point. And I'll give you a specific example for my little organization. We're a startup. We produce a lot of videos. I think so far we've created about 300 mostly short videos. Mm-hmm. Those videos have been viewed, and almost strictly organically, not a lot of paid promotion, they've been viewed 87 million times.
That is a lot.
And if you think about the old days of paid media, and how much it would cost to actually buy a TV ad to reach that many people, it's an astronomical amount. It would mm-hmm. be impossible to do. But here we are in this disintermediated world where I can reach people all over the world. My videos are free to sort of steal and download and rework for yourself. They've been translated in a number of different languages, including in Cambodia and places like that. They want to remind Cambodians about the Khmer Rouge. And so much of this history has been lost through formal education. Young people today, you've probably seen this disturbing new poll by the Victims of Communism Foundation. Young people today, they don't really know who Stalin was. They don't know who Mao was. But if you ask them who their heroes were, these guys ranked 20%. Mao killed 45 million people.
Che Guevara,
Che Guevara is cool, right?
Yeah,
he was a thug. He was a murderer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, instead of sort of shaming young people for not knowing these things, understand that public education has failed. And the way we help them is by retelling those stories. Make it easy. It might be devastating to learn that humans have done these horrible things in the 20th century, but they need to know.
And you're not attracting, one interesting thing, you're attracting a lot of people, obviously. You're not attracting, except for the politicos who demonized you, too much hostility. And it's not surprising. Your message is not geared to do that. But it's still a bit surprising, though.
Yeah, politics is inevitably a place where you will get demonized the more effective you are. And if mm-hmm. you're a threat to the other side, that's going to happen. Values, I think, are different. And I've actually, one of our projects is called Speaking with the Enemy, where I sit down, like we are right now, with a true blue progressive, someone that believes in the power of government to plan mm-hmm. people's lives. We don't do that in politics. We do it in a way that says, let's argue if we need to, but let's try to find those common values.
And on the entrepreneurial side, so to speak, this has grown by leaps and bounds. Funding is necessary to do all these things. How does that work? Do you have donors? Are you like Bernie Sanders, small gifts only? Or do you have a couple of big donors? How does it work?
You know, we did do a lot of crowdfunding at FreedomWorks, and we've started to do that at Free the People. We're a startup, so our seed money came from almost exclusively from individual libertarian donors that had supported other projects I worked on. But I'm now talking to very left-of-center foundations, mm-hmm. Some of whom have funded our work as well. It's kind of surprising to me because it's a very different donor base than the one you would do if you're doing politics.
Yeah, of course.
And some of those donors don't quite get what I'm trying to do here because it's more of a long-term project. I'm not going to transform the world tomorrow, but things are moving so fast and people are reorganizing the way they associate so quickly. We need to get ahead of this. And I think, you know, we've raised about $1 million a year in the first year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll do a lot better than that over time. But again, a lot of this is organic. A lot of this is produced in-house videos. You don't need $10, $20, $30 million to change the world anymore. It can be done
incredible.
With someone on a Facebook page.
And do you have, can you strike an alliance occasionally, like with the anti-tax people? I mean, some of them are very obsessed with their issue, whatever it is, but they might be fellow travelers for you. Do you do that?
Oh, there's all sorts of alliances, and specific issues are still sort of that teachable platform to get people to understand the broader principles of liberty. And when I coalesce with some left-leaning organizations on something like medical cannabis,
mm-hmm.
That is a broader platform to talk about healthcare freedom. Because we did a video about a mom who struggled with a brain tumor and really debilitating thing that she went through for the last 20 years. And her dad's a DEA agent, but she tried cannabis. And it changed her life.
Yeah.
And it's been government that has told her that she's not allowed to make that choice. Think about this in the broader context of healthcare. We're now in a situation where the government is going to decide what you can and can't do, what you can and can't have. And it's anathema to the way that we as people want to help each other. So I think you have to take the small examples and get to the broad principle of why government control of healthcare is a humane disaster.
Up to the moment when she did the video, had she hidden it from her father? Did they have a falling out?
No, she went to dad and got his permission before she did it. And of course, when it's your daughter, there's only one answer. You say, yes, try that. You need to try that. What they have you on right now, we talk about the opioid epidemic. All of these cannabis patients started with opioids because that's what the government decided was appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And it has devastating side effects. It can, long-term opioid use, as everybody knows, is devastating. So a lot of these patients have used cannabis to get out of an addiction that was destroying their lives.
Well, Matt Kibbe, long life to you and to freedom.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Matt Kibbe of Free the People. And soon on our show, a reprise, we're going to bring back a great photographer, one of the greatest around, Ron Galella. You remember him when he showed us the pictures of all the Hollywood stars that he'd collected over the years. He's just put out a book called The Master Builder. And yes, it is about him, but not only him. He covered Donald Trump for years at various social events. But in here, you'll find Katherine Graham, Barbara Walters, all kinds of great people in interesting situations because he has quite the eye. And so Ron will be here with us, and he'll be showing us a lot of pictures, some of which you may never have seen of the current president. And that'll be up soon on The World Show. I'm Bob Scully. Have a great week. Thanks.
Bob Scully's World Show was brought to you by Walter Surface Technologies. Only the best. And by Clox Technologies. Lighting the way to a brighter future.